We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, well, let's just cut right to the chase, Adam. It's Friday.
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Weekend. Partying, partying. Partying, partying. Fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the weekend.
Adam, we have made it through yet another week. Here we are. And Adam's back in studio after a one-pod hiatus to Mobile Pod World Headquarters.
Yeah, I served my one-game suspension, and now I'm back. Much like Michael Jordan, I'm wearing the 4-5. Is this the first time we've ever done a pod on a day in which we already did another pod?
It's certainly the first time we've done a pod after we did a live pod.
That, yes.
Live video pod.
Definitely that.
A show pod, a pod show. So we're going to talk about that. We did our first Carolina Insider Live. It was good. It was fine. It worked.
The parts other than what we did
were good.
Were great.
Yeah.
And then we brought the average down to, you know, in medium.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that and hope you got a chance to be with us yesterday at 1:30. If not, it is available on demand. You can check it out through the Go Heels social channels, and there it is available there. You can watch the show in total. We had Mac Brown, Courtney Banghart, Gio Bresci all join us for a little quick little round table to talk to about 20 minutes, something like that. So we'll talk about the show here in a second. Carolina, the university, made a big announcement. We'll talk a little bit about that, about how the fall semester, at least as of this moment, and I think we all understand in our current climate, Adam, that sometimes things change. Mox, you're the starting quarterback now. That's coming soon. Don't you worry. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We have some emails that we want to get to because we've gotten a bunch of good emails. And Adam, we have kind of sneaky, one of the best players ever to play at Carolina in Billy Cunningham, the Kangaroo Kid. And we find out what he thinks about the Kangaroo Kid nickname.
His numbers will blow you away. And if you remember, we had Garrison Brooks in here, and they blew Garrison Brooks away. That's an actual authority on basketball numbers, Garrison Brooks. So you know you can believe him. And you're right. Billy Cunningham's got some thoughts on his nickname.
So we're going to talk, I mean, legitimately, I mean, Billy Cunningham, Basketball Hall of Fame, a world champion as a player and a coach at the NBA level, was named one of the 50 greatest players in NBA history when they did that list several years ago. I mean, as good a credentials as you're going to find in the game of basketball. And so looking forward to
talking to us.
Yeah. Somehow we duped him.
Let's talk hoops
to talking to us. So we've got that. And Adam, you may remember this. I mentioned the virtual pancake dinner.
Oh, yes.
Flapjacks, if you will. And so we are going to pull one of our discussion segments from said virtual pancake dinner. And we're going to have that on the show today as well. So I pulled off two of the segments of that show. We're going to run one today and one on a show coming up in the near future. Today, it will be the discussion we had centered around Carolina women's soccer. And no big deal, Adam. We had Anson Dorrance, Mia Hamm, Crystal Dunn, and former podcast Heather O'Reilly all on a virtual call together talking women's soccer and talking Carolina. I think people are really going to enjoy listening to that.
That's a good group.
That's as good as it gets in American women's soccer.
And you said that Mia Hamm has a great answer in this audio. And just to make sure I'm doing it correctly, should I push pause and go fix myself pancakes, or will you be providing the pancakes?
It's totally up to you. That's an individual choice.
Okay.
Now, let me remind you that we're brought to you by UNC Healthcare, who I'm sure are proud sponsors
at least
moment.
For right now.
Dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds, help you stay in the game, keep you in the game at your very best. UNCHealthcare.org/sports. By the way, Adam, you lied to the pod listeners last pod.
Better than cursing, Adam.
Yeah. You said that Jason Kyler told a great Big Grit story. No, sir. That was off the air that he told us that story.
I thought about that after the fact, but then I just couldn't quite place where that story had occurred. Turns out it was off the air.
Yeah. It occurred in Maui. It had to do with Jason Kyler buying Eric breakfast. It was hilarious. Did he buy grits? We don't know. It was off the air.
Jones and I know, and Jason Kyler knows, and Big Grits knows. Other than that, nobody knows.
That's the extra gold feed.
Yeah. Platinum.
Okay, let's talk about the live show. So it's something we've been thinking about doing or something similar. And Adam, I think it's fair to say we went into this kind of with the idea of we don't know where the future goes with it. It's more of, hey, let's try this, see if it's something that our fans like. See, and by our fans, I mean Carolina fans. If it's something that Tar Heel fans like, if it's something that we think has legs moving forward. We've got some great partners with BMW and Wells Fargo that are involved in it. And so it was kind of a test balloon to see how much we want to try this. We're going to do a couple through the summer, see how they work out, and then elect if we want to do something similar, grow with it, change it moving forward. But we have heard from fans of the podcast, people who listen, that they'd be interested in some kind of video element to what we're doing. We've also been in heavy discussions about getting some cameras here in Pod World headquarters and being able to video our interviews that we are back when the world hopefully gets to a little bit of a more normal situation, hopefully in the near future, where we can have guests here in Pod World headquarters again. So that's in discussion too. But we'll see where it goes. Had a great team of people helping to work on it. And like you said, it was a first go round that I think went really well. And the reason why it went well is because we had good guests in Mac Brown, Courtney Banghart, and Joe Bresci.
Yeah, I think, as you said, it's a work in progress. We know people are consuming podcasts in different ways, even as each day progresses. For example, we just got a message just last week about folks who wanted to see the podcast on YouTube, even if it's not the actual video of the podcast, having the audio go to YouTube because that's how they consume their podcasts. So we're learning along with you, and hopefully we can put together some fun shows while we're all learning. Friend of the pod, Ken Cleary, spearheading quite a bit of that and making it actually occur. So nice to have him involved, and we'll see where it goes. If people like it, it'll go somewhere. If people hate it, we'll act like we never did it.
Yeah, we'll just pretend it didn't happen if it doesn't go well. Be like, what are you talking about?
That's what the plan was for this podcast at the start. So we could still just fade away and you would never know we were here. That could still happen.
So keep your eye out. We are going to do some more of those. There's not necessarily a set schedule. Like, I can't tell you we're going to do it every single week, but we will give you some heads up time before it happens, and we'll continue. We're gonna be, Adam, like I imagine friend of the pod Ronald Curry would be like if he was an offensive coordinator, and that is flexible.
That's right. A chameleon.
Yeah. So we'll keep moving with that and see how it goes.
But we won't be a chameleon on the screen because then we'd be hard to see.
Yeah, that's right. We'd be like wearing a green sweatshirt and when you're in the green screen.
And we like to dress alike when we're
always hilarious when the weatherman does that on Halloween and the weather person's like doing the weather and they're wearing like a skeleton.
Gumby outfit.
Yeah, it's hilarious. But thank you to those who watched. Had good numbers on the live viewing that is available, as I said, on demand if you want to check it out. Adam and I did some shenanigans, and there were the interviews with Mac Brown, Courtney Bankhart, Joe Bresci, all together. Adam, I do think we learned need fewer than three. We need to have one or two people as the guests instead of having a big round table. I think it's better when we have fewer.
Because when we have fewer, we can play man-to-man.
Yeah.
We're not a zone defense interview team.
Look, Jim Boeheim's not walking through that door.
I don't teach it, and I don't like it. And so we're going to play man-to-man on the pod interviews going forward, most likely, unless we get an incredible opportunity like the 1957 starters.
It's always a great day to be a Tar Heel. Adam says that every single day. And the UNC General Alumni Association celebrates that feeling with him, serving more than 336,000 living alumni, 66,000 GAA members, students for a few years. This is true, but alumni forever. Learn more, alumni.unc.edu. Adam, one piece of pretty big news as it relates to the University of North Carolina is that the Chancellor, Kevin Guskowitz, on, I believe it was Thursday morning, announced the tentative academic schedule for this upcoming semester, which is, I believe students arrive on August, I think it's 8th, classes start on the 10th, with all classes and exams being complete before the Thanksgiving break. They're taking away fall break to help get in all the instruction needed for the full semester. The only breaks will be, I believe, Labor Day and University Day. So a proactive move, Adam. Some other places have done that. I know Notre Dame did something similar. I think maybe Syracuse did something similar. And so a proactive move by the university. How it will affect athletics, no idea. I do think when you get into that December time period, it will be interesting to see what happens, because a lot of this is being done to get people off of campus in December because of some knowledge that they feel like they have learned that there's the potential of a rebound of the Adam's best friend, the coronavirus, there in December.
Jones, I'm not a college professor. I don't know if you know that.
Not yet.
No.
Till we have a podcast. What if we had a podcasting class, Adam?
A doctor of pod. But I've got a question. Is this schedule not better just in general? Isn't this better? Like for the rest of life, not just this year.
Well, I don't know. I would think the being done before Thanksgiving would be attractive, I would think.
Yeah.
You lose fall break, which I know
it's like 2 days.
Yeah, it's just a couple of days. Your summer is shorter significantly, but I would also assume that you're going to do this in the spring semester, and so your summer would, in theory, start sooner. Or you get the longer break for the winter if you don't adjust your spring semester. So I think all that kind of evens out eventually. I don't know. It's not worse.
I think it's clearly better. And again, I'm sure there's a million things here I'm not thinking of. I think it's clearly better from a university standpoint. I don't know about athletically, which of course is why we're here. None of us really know what this is going to mean for college athletics. One thing that jumps off the page at you right off the bat, the way the calendar is set up, let's say everything happens like it's on paper. Carolina basketball is leaving for Hawaii when exams start and is playing four games while exams are going on. That seems like that may need some working out. Whether you take them early, you take them late, it's just difficult if you want to keep basketball like it is. And again, this is a big picture discussion. There's people who think it shouldn't start until January anyway and be a one semester sport.
Yeah, like January to May, right?
Right. But there's so much time.
What do you think about that?
I think that's fine. I don't mind that. I think once I got into it, I would like it better. Because
I think there's been some discussion about baseball too, about maybe starting baseball later. And I'm not saying these are like Mark Emmert maybe isn't having these discussions. I don't know, but that maybe it becomes you start later in the spring and finish up in July for baseball.
I think that's tough because you're running into MLB draft issues. I think basketball is very doable as a one semester sport. I think the only thing is, are you okay if your marquee Thanksgiving tournaments are now taking place in late January? I don't see why not.
New Year tournament.
Put them on the bye weekend before the Super Bowl. When the sports world is looking for something to do, that weekend becomes college basketball weekend. So I'm not opposed to that. I think there are some obstacles to work out this specific fall. But again, we don't even know what the basketball situation is going to be or if the Maui Invitational is even happening. We hope it is. So just some hurdles to overcome. In general, this calendar, I like this. Also, if Kevin Guskowitz says it's smart, I'm on board with him.
Well, I do think that and I don't just say this because we like Kevin Guskowitz, and by the way, he's been on the pod.
I'm Kevin Guskowitz. See you later, Big Grits.
I think strong leadership has been evident from the University of North Carolina with Kevin Guskowitz and the people that he has around him. He has acted, in my opinion, in a measured way that makes sense, and trying to get back to what we all want to get back to, but doing so in a way that makes sense.
I absolutely think that, and I would even say that as the parent of a current student, and there's no one who's more unhappy about everything than parents.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, school, activities, whatever, the person in charge is always doing something wrong. Even as the parent of a current student, I think he's done an excellent job. He's been clear. He's been open.
A lot of communication.
There's been the right amount of communication. You don't feel inundated, but you feel like when you get something from the university, it's worthwhile and valuable. So I think it's gone as well as something in this situation can go.
Adam, anything else before we get to our dual interviews today? Again, we're going to have Billy Cunningham, and then you'll be listening to the women's soccer segment from our virtual pancake dinner.
No.
Okay. We're going to start with our conversation with Billy Cunningham. It is presented by the Atma Hotel Group, new owners of the Sheraton Chapel Hill and Courtyard by Marriott Chapel Hill. So we'll talk to Billy Cunningham, come back, and then we'll get you reset and ready to go with our women's soccer discussion. But first, should we call him the Kangaroo Kid? I'm not going to.
I'm not doing it.
Here's Mr. Billy Cunningham here on the Carolina Insider.
Our guest today has got an unbelievable resume in which he has basically done everything in basketball. But I think the best thing we can say about him is we had a very good current player in here with us, Garrison Brooks, a couple months ago. And we were talking about Billy Cunningham's numbers. And Garrison Brooks was blown away and said, those are numbers that will never be even approached. So that's the best introduction I can give to Billy Cunningham. When you're even impressing today's players who are, in general, impressed with themselves, you have really done something. So, Billy Cunningham, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, gosh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. It's a different game with the three-point line and different rules. And now we have the new rule being instituted in regards to players, athletes being able to use their likeness for their own benefit. So that's going to be a very interesting can of worms that is going to be opened up, and how that works out, time will tell.
Catch us up in what's happening with Billy Cunningham right now.
Well, right now, I'm still very active in different business ventures that I'm involved in. Spend a lot of time in Florida as much as we can. We love it down here. And then we spend the rest of the year up in the Philadelphia area where our children and grandchildren are. So we have a wonderful life, and things are good. Everybody should have our problems.
This may be a really basic or dumb question, but...
There's no such thing as a dumb question.
All right, that's a good baseline for me then. How is it that now in 2020, and Mr. Cunningham played in the mid-60s at Carolina, how is it that you are still the all-time leader in rebounds per game, still the all-time leader in double-doubles at Carolina, and still in the top five in total rebounds, even though you played just three seasons? How did you put up those kind of incredible numbers?
I guess the talent I played against wasn't very good, number one. you know, at that time, that was the first period of time that Dean Smith was coaching at Carolina. Also, we weren't very good because of the limitations in regards to recruiting. I probably had to do a little bit more that, you know, the Carolina teams recently I wouldn't have been able to or wouldn't have had to achieve. But, I didn't realize. A year ago someone told me, you know, do you know you hold a record in college basketball? I said, what are you talking about? He said, you know, you have the most consecutive double-doubles in the history of college basketball. And I had no idea. And they said, 40. I said, I had no idea about that. But it's a very nice thing to have on your resume, but it didn't help us win a lot of games.
How does one become a skilled rebounder?
You know, I don't know if you watched any of the Michael Jordan documentary mm-hmm. that they have on, and it was talking, and they were discussing it with Dennis Rodman, who everyone looks at and shakes their head about the way he conducted himself off the court. But if you listen to him, during that documentary, he explained how he knew, for the most part, if somebody was shooting the ball from a certain part of the court area, where the likeness was where the ball would come off the rim or the backboard if they missed. And you just develop a certain instinct for that. And the other thing is that to be a good rebounder, you have to have the ability to jump off both feet. Many people need to take a step forward before they jump. If you do that, that limits your range of where if the ball comes off on different directions, because your momentum would be going in one direction. If you're flat-footed and go up with both feet, you can go in all four directions. Hope I made some sense there.
I can't jump off of any amount of feet, but what you said makes sense if I had any athletic ability. You were recruited by both Frank McGuire and Dean Smith for the Tar Heels. For a New York kid, what was that like to have Frank McGuire come into your home with this assistant coach who nobody was really sure who he was?
I didn't know who he was either. That other assistant coach who turned out to be at the worst, one of the three greatest coaches of all time. I was probably Frank McGuire's easiest recruit. And I was the last recruit for Frank McGuire for North Carolina anyway. But his sister lived around the block from me in Brooklyn. I used to deliver newspapers to him. And to this day, my sister's best friend was Frank McGuire's niece. So when he came to visit my house, and left, I was the first in my family to go off to college. And my family was very concerned about, oh my goodness, he's going to lose his Catholic faith, going away if he goes to these. So I had two options. Either I went to a Catholic university or I went to play for Uncle Frank. And that's the way they referred to him. So I didn't have a lot of choices, and I wanted to leave New York and see what the rest of the world was like.
Was there a culture shock for you coming from New York down to Chapel Hill?
You got to be kidding. Overwhelming in so many ways, you know. And it's I'm glad it's a time and a period of time that you all weren't part of. It was the first time I was ever on a plane, and getting off the plane in Raleigh-Durham and having to use the men's room and seeing colored and seeing, that on the men's room door, I had no idea what that meant. And I was introduced to segregation at that point. And living in Brooklyn, you didn't have all the exposure and awareness of what was other things going on around the world. You were just living in your little world in Brooklyn. So it was quite a culture shock. It was also interesting how nice people were in Chapel Hill, everyone saying hello, walking down the street, and I thought all the girls saying, hey, how are you? I said, oh my goodness, they all love me, you know, here the girls. But it was truly a great experience for myself. I met my wife there, and my daughter ended up going to Chapel Hill.
You were on the bus and played a big part when Coach Smith was hung in effigy after the loss to at Wake Forest. What do you remember about that night?
Well, first of all, I didn't realize what it all meant until it was quickly explained to me. And it was, I still remember how upset I was. People blaming Coach Smith for the reason we lost. We had lost to Wake Forest at Wake Forest. And I think there might have been Billy Gallantyre or somebody, maybe one or two, I think, players beside myself tore it down. And it was, it turned out to be an unbelievable motivating factor for the club because of our strong feelings that we had towards Coach and realizing that it wasn't his fault because in a few days we went over and played Duke. And we beat Duke, who we shouldn't have beaten. And I think that that truly, you know, when you hear the word, well, win one for the Gipper, that old saying, you know, that truly was that day beating Duke. And it's kind of interesting, too, that here you have, we just mentioned, one of the three greatest coaches in the history of basketball. And one of the others was Mike Krzyzewski down the road at Duke, who in today's day and age, both of them would have been fired because we need instant gratification. And I remember when, I'm trying to think of the athletic director's name at Duke, which I'll remember after I get off this, and he was holding a press conference, and it was assumed at this press conference, he was going to announce that the termination or not an extension to Mike Krzyzewski's contract. And he walked in and explained that he had extended his contract. And it's hard to believe that these two men were on the verge of, you know, if today's day and age, they would have been fired. It's just hard to believe.
As you said, Coach Smith, one of the best to ever do it. What was he like as a young head coach? What did you notice from him as a going through it for the first time? What things did you pick up on him as a young coach?
Well, he was meticulous. He was a math major at Kansas. Everything was down to the minute. You hear about analytics today. That's a big word for all sports that. You have teams spending fortunes on analytics. Well, he was doing it back then, but they didn't use that word. In the way he would evaluate films, things being done on the court, he was very demanding, but in a beautiful way. Never really raised his voice. And also, you know, when he was became head coach, he was 32 years old, maybe. It's about the age I became a head coach. And I remember what I had to go through in the learning experience and learning about yourself. And he incorporated so many things to the game, not only for Carolina, when players come out of the game, everyone stands up in support, but you had, you know, the four corners. We could go down the list on what a student he was, almost like a scientist in the game of basketball. And he turned out to be, after my career, a very dear friend and someone I had great feelings for. And the beauty of him, too, was he treated the number one player on the team the same as the guy who was the walk-on. We were all teammates, period. And everybody abides by the same rules. And that was, you know, and he cared so deeply about his players. And you saw that with how many players left Carolina early to go to pro basketball. But the amazing thing to me is that every one of them came back to get their degrees after leaving Carolina early. And it's all because of Coach Smith, because he had an agreement with the players. I'll tell you when to go, when you can make the most money in the great situation, but you have to promise me you'd come back and get your degree. And it's amazing how the players became millionaires immediately, that they still abided by that commitment to Coach Smith.
You spoke at Coach Smith's service at the Smith Center, and in that talk you mentioned the experience of riding in a car with Coach Smith. For those of us who never had that opportunity, what was that like?
Oh, my goodness, you better have a seatbelt on. Coach had a heavy foot. He needed to get there as quickly as humanly possible. And we did a lot of different things that I don't know. I remember going with him to the Young Christian Athletes programs up in Asheville. We would drive up there and go to those different things. And he was just hard to describe how his number one concern was, you know, being almost a father or uncle or to the players that he had taken from their families, and now it was his responsibility that they become better men after they leave, and that's what he did. And I remember we had a reunion his first 5 years of coaching. This is an amazing stat. Nearly 70%, I think it was 69-point-something percent, of the players that played for him during that period of time went on to graduate school. Not graduated, went on to graduate school to become lawyers, doctors, etc. So they were truly student-athletes when you went to Carolina playing for Coach Smith, and I'm sure it's the same way with Roy Williams.
You mentioned in an answer earlier that you were a young coach at one point in time as well, and of course an NBA champion as both a player and a coach. I think you still have the best winning percentage as a Philadelphia 76ers head coach. There are so many great players who try to become coaches, and they struggle with it. Why were you able, in your opinion, to have success and to take over both greatness as a player and also be able to be great teaching and coaching other players?
You know, it's a great question, and I really don't have an answer for you, because I think one of the problems that some friends that became coaches and didn't enjoy it or have the success people expected is they expected the player to be able to do the things that they were able to do, and it was easy for them to do. I never looked at a player and thought, well, why can't he do that? I understood what his abilities were, his shortcomings. And I was fortunate to have some very exceptional players to be able to coach, and such as Julius Erving and Moses Malone and Bobby Jones, who was the greatest. I mean, he was the glue to our team, and he was a perfect example of a player that could have cared less how many points he scored, minutes he played, as long as we won. And he truly was a huge factor in the locker room, pulling our team together. So I was just blessed to have great players and great players, people to coach.
Who was the first person to call you Kangaroo Kid, and did you like it?
It was not favorite, but you know, I didn't. No one came to me and said, "Hey, what do you think about this?" Quincy, John Quincy, I think that was his name, was the public relations man at Carolina when I was there, and all of a sudden that nickname was placed on me. It went on for quite a bit, and periodically I'll run into somebody and they'll refer to me in that manner. You know, it just shows you how old they are, but it was a strange one, but it's what it was.
There's that all-time picture of you holding the kangaroo, the stuffed kangaroo standing by the bell tower. Do you remember when, I'm guessing, Bob Quincy came to you and was like, "All right, Billy, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you this kangaroo, and we're going to go out to the bell tower."
I was young, obedient, and, you know, it didn't hurt anybody. At the end of the day, it was fun. I understood why he was doing something like this, and he was looking for something that could jump to a high peak, and that's the one he chose for me.
So you played with Wilt Chamberlain. What was he like as a person and as a player and as a teammate?
He was wonderful. He was, you know, and we all, Michael Jordan is considered the best player by most. I don't know where you put, my opinion is you cannot, every generation is different. The rules change for the game, style of play is different, etc. But Wilt Chamberlain has to be in that category. They changed the rules because of him. At one time, the lane, the foul lane, was, I think, 6 feet wide. And at that time, all he had to do was catch the ball and just dunk it. So it would have made the game ridiculous. So when he came in the game, they made it 10 feet wide in what it is today. And it used to be if you could take the ball out of bounds underneath the basket, now you have to take it out. If you're taking it out under your own basket, you have to go to the side. You can't be underneath the basket inbounding the ball. In those days, you could, and you just threw the ball over the top of the backboard, and he'd catch it and dunk it. So he changed the game as soon as he came into the game. And there's one record he has that will never be broken. And he played all 82 games in a season. And in a game, there's 48 minutes. And Wilt Chamberlain averaged over 48 minutes a game. He missed 5 minutes of a whole season. And the only reason he missed that 5 minutes is he was thrown out of the game. So, matter of fact, Frank McGuire was his coach that year when he set all those records and averaged over 50 points a game.
Little did he know he could have invented something called load management and just sat out for games at a time.
Oh, he's just, just a phenomenal athlete and specimen and a special person. As a matter of fact, today I'm one of the co-chairs of, we have the Chamberlain Foundation, where we give scholarships to needy children in the Philadelphia area, and we've given out nearly 100 scholarships to young people to go further their education in college.
You also played in the ABA? For those
played
of us
AB, for the Carolina Cougars.
Exactly. For those of us who didn't experience it, what was the difference in the ABA and the NBA on court and off court?
Well, on court, the three-point line, that's where that came from, and that was in the ABA. And also, the basketball was red, white, and blue. And the game was at a much quicker pace than the NBA at that time. And it was a younger players. Many players came out of college. That's where you first started seeing young men leaving college early and playing professional ball in the ABA, such as Julius Erving, George Gervin. You know, you can go down the list of all the great players that left college early and joined the ABA. And at one point, you know, the talent was actually getting better in the ABA than the NBA. The difference, though, was the travel was pretty rough. You know, when I played for the Carolina Cougars, we had three home courts. So we had home court in Raleigh, Greensboro, and Charlotte. So we didn't have a lot of home games in Greensboro, where we hung our hat, so to speak. So there was a lot of driving, and we were flying a lot of there was an airline called Piedmont Airlines, and just to get to Louisville, Kentucky, I think it was four or five stops we had to make on this Piedmont Airlines plane. So it was travel wasn't good, and in many cases, players would be running, as soon as they got their paycheck, would be running to the bank to cash it just in case the team was running out of money. So it was a great experience. As a matter of fact, it was Larry Brown's first coaching job, head coaching job, was with the Cougars, and Doug Moe was the assistant coach. So it was a Carolina connection for sure.
Billy, we talked to Donnie Walsh recently, and he was talking about Larry Brown and said he just thought he was one of the finest coaches that he had ever been around. I'd just be interested in your opinion on Larry and his ability as a coach. He's certainly been successful in multiple places.
Well, he's in the Hall of Fame as a coach. I think that almost speaks well, you know, and I agree with Donnie Walsh, who is my first roommate at Carolina, and with the abilities of Larry as a coach, he just never could stay put very long. You just look at his resume in the different places that Larry has coached, and I think the last place he coached, he was over in Italy and coaching over there. So I don't know if anybody else has won an NBA championship as well as an NCAA championship when he was coaching at Kansas.
Last thing, at least for me, you mentioned Julius Erving and obviously an all-time great. What was your relationship like with him, player, coach, and what kind of person was he to be around and to coach?
I can't imagine anybody being a better teammate, an easier person to coach than Julius Erving. To this day, we're close friends. I coached him for 8 years, and I don't know how he stood up to listening to me talk for 8 years. You know, you got to remember, in the NBA, you're playing over 100 games, including exhibition, playoffs, regular season, practice, etc. And doing that for 8 years with the same person, I don't know. I don't think I could have done listened to myself that long. But he was wonderful, and that's one of the reasons I can't believe that a guy like Brady was able to listen to Belichick for 20 years, and Gronkowski being tired of listening to him. I understand. You know, you just have so many speeches as a coach. That's why college, at least there's a turnover, and they're only listening to you at maximum for 4 years.
really appreciate you being so generous with your time. What a treat to get to talk with a Basketball Hall of Famer for this amount of time. One last thing for you. All these folks we've talked about today, almost all of them have had some connection to New York City. What is it about New York City that helped build the foundation of Carolina basketball as we know it?
Well, that was Frank McGuire. Very simple. Frank coached at St. John's. He was a New Yorker. He was very well connected and respected. He knew every high school coach and had a wonderful scouting system in New York and was, at that time, New York City basketball was as good as it gets on a national basis. So he really had the upper hand nationally. And you look at the 57 team, I think every starter was from New York City. I think, you know, so Frank was wired in New York City, and it changed when he went to South Carolina, if you notice. He picked that up, and it was recruiting, you know, most of the kids out of New York City for South Carolina.
We appreciate Billy Cunningham's time. And again, I mean, Adam, his rebound, some of his numbers are just not ever going to be broken. Some of his records, never.
They're not going to be approached.
No. Not even come close to him.
I think if you're making a list of unbreakable Tar Heel basketball records, his double-double statistic is number one on that list.
His rebounds per game might be on that list. I mean, he is just, he was as good a rebounder as Carolina basketball's ever had. I don't care what era he played in. He still had to go do it. And to be able to put up those type of numbers, incredible. So we appreciate his time. Truly one of the best ever to play at Carolina. We appreciate his time being with us today. Speaking of best ever, let's get to our conversation that came from the virtual pancake dinner. So this is Bubba Cunningham, of course, the AD at Carolina, and myself. We're the ones doing this interview. And we talked to Mia Hamm, Heather O'Reilly, Crystal Dunn, and Anson Dorrance about Carolina women's soccer, about the coronavirus, how they're dealing with that, how Mia Hamm influenced the other women who we discussed or had this conversation with. So there's a lot in this. It's not super long, like 15 minutes. But it was too good not to let you listen to, too good to only have it out there in the one way, which was that virtual pancake dinner, which was really only for student athletes. So we wanted to make sure that this was something that you could hear as well. So we'll get to that. Again, it is brought to you by our friends at the Atma Hotel Group. And come back. Adam has a list, have a bunch of emails to get to, that and more when we return to the Carolina Insider.
Pancakes are one of the most iconic breakfasts, and we found what it actually takes to make the best, fluffiest buttermilk pancakes ever.
You're talking about national championships or championships in total. I'm not sure you're going to find a more accomplished group than the foursome that is going to join us now. First of all, a four-time national champion at Carolina, three-time ACC Player of the Year, two-time Female Athlete of the Year in the ACC. Oh, no big deal. Also, two-time Olympic gold medalist, two-time World Cup champion, an icon in the sport of soccer, Mia Hamm, joining us tonight. We're so excited. Mia, thank you so much for being here. Also, Heather O'Reilly, two-time national champion, three-time Olympic gold medalist, two-time World Cup champion, now an assistant coach with Carolina women's soccer. Crystal Dunn, a 2012 national championship. She's just about a year removed from winning a World Cup championship of her own. Crystal, thank you for being here. And then, of course, Anson Dorrance, 22 national titles here at Carolina. Bubba, this is quite some hardware we have with us here.
Unbelievable. That's why I don't wear any rings. I don't have any compared to what they have. It's very embarrassing.
Thank you guys again so much for being here. Oh, gosh, where to start? Mia, let's start with you. First of all, how are you? How's your family getting along through this difficult time? And just how things going?
Everyone's doing well. Thank you for asking. I'm learning you know, the new math, second grade Common Core.
Got a lot harder.
Yes, it definitely did. So that's a challenge, just organizing our son on his Zoom classes. But you know, everyone, all family is safe and healthy, and we're just grateful.
Mia, you have made such a icon out of yourself from through the sport of soccer. And of course, I know that is a lot of individual talent and individual hard work. I'd be interested how Carolina helped you set those roots, how Anson helped you set those roots to what you eventually went on and were able to accomplish.
Well, I think my time at Carolina is where I really grew, not just as a player, but as a person. I think the way Anson and Dino set up training was to teach you how to fail and how to deal with that disappointment, but also in an environment that really empowered you to want to make a difference every single day. And so our weekly training structure was set up to where it was all about, at the beginning, your individual impact in winning. And then as we got closer to the weekend games, it was how do you make your team win and how do you influence that? So it was really buying into your own individual development, but how it fits into our success as a team. And that, for me, really fueled me to wanting to be better every single day. So you were accountable. And as I said, you learned how to struggle and you were pushed every single day, but you never, ever felt that you were alone. And I think that kind of environment really helped me grow because I wasn't scared about making mistakes. I wanted to really find out how good I could be. And, you know, that's what Carolina helped me achieve.
Heather, Crystal, I saw both you guys while Mia was talking there kind of nodding a little bit and agreeing with her. You guys, of course, came after Mia's time here in Chapel Hill. Heather, I know at least I've heard you say you had Mia's poster up on your wall at one point growing up.
Dead or still there?
What was it like for you guys to follow in her footsteps and continue the legacy that is Carolina's women's soccer program?
Oh, it was such an honor. I remember when I was getting recruited to other schools, you know, the big question was like, okay, do you want to be part of this amazing dynasty, or do you want to be, you know, on a team that tries to take down the dynasty? And I remember being like, I want to be on the dynasty. I want to be on the dynasty. I mean, what they like for me, it was a no-brainer to be part of that winning culture. The common thread, obviously, through all these years with all these amazing players has been Anson, and that's because he cares about culture. And it's one of the most important things that I think builds teams. And the culture that Anson built for the U.S. team and for UNC for the last 30-plus years was one that kind of gives us the freedom to compete and to look each other in the eye and say, like, I care about you, so I'm going to try to beat you. And I don't think that, like, a lot of other places embrace that feeling of intensity like we embrace here at Carolina. And it's also a culture of hard work, and that hard work is actually fun. It's not like this painful, terrible experience. It actually can be enjoyable if you're kind of going through it together and facing adversity together. And I think that, that culture has been so strong. I remember in 2015 when we won the World Cup and we're all doing like angels in the confetti on the field in Canada. One of the first things that we did, the couple of Tar Heels that were on that team said, like, let's get a picture of the heels. And I guarantee there was no other schools that were thinking about their college in that moment to get the players together to take a photo. So culture is everything, community is everything, and it's such an honor to be part of it.
Crystal, how about you?
I mean, what can I say? These two women obviously said it all, but just to, you know, go off of what they've already said is, you know, the hard work was something that really stood out, just joining in this community. And what really sold me, obviously, to go to UNC was obviously me and him, but that's the second point. but it's players like Mia, players like Hale, but I remember my first conversation with Anson was really about, hey, I can see you competing on this pitch, but it's going to be hard. And I think in that moment, that's when I realized he's not going to give me a spot. He's not going to tell me you know, you're a starter, but he's going to say, I believe in you, and I truly think that you're a great player, but you need to work for it. And I think in that moment, I realized it's a special place. I can't take any moment for granted. And he allowed us to be competitive, and it was fun. Like Hayo said, it's enjoyable, and you don't have to feel weird about being like, oh, I want to beat you, you know? And I think in some environments, they make you feel awkward about that. But I think with Anton, it was like, no, this is what we're about. We're competitors. And that's why we win. And that's why he's been able to build this legacy.
Anson, so we just got quick comments from three of the very best to ever do it in the sport that you have built your livelihood on as well. They all played for you. They all played at Carolina. How does that happen? How does what you have built, how does that happen?
We lost them.
Oh, we lost Anson. This is the first time Anson's ever been silent when we've asked him a question before.
You're on mute.
Hang on. How's this?
We did it. All right, now we got him.
We have found, on our coaches' meetings, we have found the mute button, and we use it frequently.
I did. Donovan showed me where the mute button is. My kids have moved home with me, and then, of course, as soon as he showed me where it was, I forgot where it was. But, you know, when I could tell I wasn't being heard – I did find it, so here we go. But here's what I was trying to say. What I love about this collection of people you guys have picked, holy cow, do you know you've got every single world championship team represented with these three? Wow. Do you know you've got every single gold medal team represented with these three? What I'm looking at right now, this is the history of the game. And, of course, all of us right now are watching The Last Dance. I can't believe how much fun we're watching this incredible, you know, Michael Jordan history of, well, I'm waiting for the Mia Hamm story. I want it to be the same. I want it to be, you know, 10 separate episodes, and I want this to be just like what we're looking at with Michael Jordan. Because you know what? Yes, he did an amazing job, not just for his incredible university, but also for the game of basketball. And that's going to be Mia's story as well. It wasn't just her winning national championships for us, and gold medals and world championships for the United States. She built our game. And so I'm looking forward to that 10-part series. And so if you had to pick these three, I'm looking at you guys have checked every single box. This is incredible.
Plus we have pancakes. What more can we do tonight?
You know, I know it's cliche, but our department mission, we educate and inspire through athletics. I have used Mia's name as the inspiration for so many women in this country, so many girls to get into sports, to achieve the level of success. Mia was absolutely a trailblazer for women's athletics. And Anson, you did build that culture that Heather talked about. Crystal, you're continuing to inspire young women today. And you guys have no idea the impact of the lives that you're having. And we are so proud of everything that you have achieved. And Anson, the great credit goes to you for assembling this dynasty, one of the greatest dynasties in sport, not just college sports or anything else in the world, greatest dynasties. So thank you to all of you.
And he's not done yet.
No.
That's exactly right. I do have some rings, fingers available.
Yeah. I'd love if I could, before we let you guys go, and gosh, we could do this for an hour, but we are trying to stay on time tonight. We've got more than 100 student athletes watching us this evening, all Carolina student athletes who just finished up their semester, finished exams today. Obviously, this has been a unique 2 months or so for them, as it has for all of us. I'd just be interested if you could each maybe give them a quick word of advice or a word of encouragement. Some of them had their seasons pulled away this year. I'd just be interested. Chris, I'll start with you since you had to be the third on the last one. If you could start and maybe just a word of encouragement or advice for those student athletes listening and watching tonight.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, these are obviously not ideal times that we're all in. But I think for the most part, just try to take positives out of this moment. Maybe you get to spend more time now with family members that you weren't able to see a lot, or catch up with friends that you weren't able to really talk to a lot. So I think in this moment, just really leaning on each other is all I can really say, and hopefully we come out of this and we're just stronger from it.
Heather, how about you?
I think that this is a unique time in that, like, we have so much time on our hands. It would be really wasteful to not be really like reflective during this time. I know that we've talked to the soccer team about about that is now is a time that you can really invest in yourself. And I would challenge the student athletes to do the same. You know, and it, if you have big dreams, which all of us do, to go to this fine university, that's fine. But, you know, what's your plan? And you have to have a plan to back up these big dreams. So I think now is a real time to do like an introspective deep dive on how you're going to attack your dreams, and formulate a plan. What are you going to do every day? What are you going to do every week? What are you going to do every month in order to achieve what you want to? So, yeah, I would say use this time wisely, because we might not ever see free time like this again.
Mia, how about you?
Well, I think first and foremost, for if you all ever have kids or grandkids and they start complaining, you can talk to them about, oh, let me tell you what happened in 2020.
I was having to do second grade math in 2020.
Exactly. Exactly. I saw the sun once a week. But I think what's so unique about what you're doing here and the three of us on this call is we've all crossed paths, and soccer has brought us together, but that nod that we have is because we played here, is because we grew here. And no matter where I've traveled all over the world, Carolina will forever be my home. It is where I learned so much about myself and what I could endure and what I could be, but more importantly about the people that came into my life and made me better and made me want to be better every single day. So the opportunity to go to Carolina to represent and have that NC on your chest is something that you should all be incredibly proud of. And your experiences here will carry you through the rest of your lives. So, you know, the athletes that haven't been able to complete their seasons, the time that you have spent here is so precious and so unique, and you'll continue to have that nod with, you know, future players that you come across and people that went to Carolina. It's just a very special place.
Anson, it might be tough to top that, but we'd love some final words from you as well.
Well, I'd be crazy to compete with any of those three, so trust me, I'm not going to compete with them. But let me share this. First of all, I loved you guys asking me to read that Kuralt quote about, you know, this incredible university that all of us are a part of. I absolutely love it. What is it that binds us to this place as to no other? Every time I hear it or even speak it, chills go up and down my spine. And that's because I absolutely love everything about this extraordinary university. I loved it here when I was a student. I loved it early in my coaching career. I still love it. In fact, I can't seem to retire. I mean, heck, I couldn't find the mute button a minute ago. And yet Bubba is still allowing me to coach here, which I absolutely appreciate. I am really enjoying it. And I enjoy so much about it. I enjoy our leadership. I mean, can you believe it? Kevin Guskowitz is our chancellor. Are you kidding me? He comes from us. He comes from us. I just think this is wonderful. I mean, there's so many great things going on. In the old days, and, you know, Mia's got recollections of this. I mean, we worked out of a slum, but we loved it. We absolutely loved it. And now that I can't climb stairs anymore, I'm glad, Bubba, you put an elevator in my, you know, two-story building. So now I can actually get to the office without stumbling over myself. And now when I walk into my office, are you kidding me? I have a nicer office than the multimillionaire that built us the stadium. Are you kidding me? I mean, I just can't believe, you know, there's so many things about this place I absolutely love. But I also love all of the kids that compete here. And I just feel for the spring sports. I was counting on 5 possible national championships. I mean, holy cow, all those teams were good. And I'm a big Director's Cup guy. I want us to win everything. I want us to beat everyone to death. And I love the fact that one of my kids that was recruited by Jenny Slingloff, that was playing on the field where she played for me in the fall, and Julia Dorsey, I was going to have a front row seat to her entire season, which, of course, was taken away. And one of my favorite neighbors, Joe Bresci, he had an undefeated season. In fact, I went up to his house 4 days ago, bored of basketball. So what are we doing right now in our cul-de-sac? We're playing 2v2, baby. Me, my daughter, and a friend, it's 2v2. And we're not calling fouls because, of course, that's for, you know, fruitcakes. And Melissa can't believe it because I'm staggering home. And she has to help me up the stairs. I take overdoses of ibuprofen and gabapentin just to fall asleep at night. But I love everything about being in this extraordinary community with all these wonderful coaches, great students, and tremendous campus leaders. So for me, for all the kids that are out there, yeah, just listen. And the stuff and advice you got from Crystal and Heather and Mia, please take it to heart. Because don't take for granted where you are right now. It'll be a part of you for the rest of your life. I also have to give a shout out to Heather. Do you know she's up for an Emmy? She's up for an Emmy. Are you kidding me? This girl from Jersey is up for an Emmy? I didn't know they had to learn how to speak in Jersey really late. So
come on now.
Jersey girl is up for an Emmy? Are you kidding me? I absolutely love it. And you know what? She's earned it. I love that World Cup, not just because Crystal and Tobin and all these other Tar Heels were part of another world championship, but I love tuning into Heather. My wife, Melissa, loves listening to Heather. So we enjoyed that World Cup from the booth, from the field, in every possible respect. And so I'm very proud of all of my Tar Heels. And congratulations, Crystal. They took one of the best 10s and 9s I've ever seen in my life and made her a left back. And we won because you were willing to make that sacrifice. And so I just love everything about my kids, this community, and this spring collection of athletes that were just robbed of a chance to do something absolutely extraordinary.
Don't let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any Tar Heel game action this upcoming fall. Let LS Tractor help make short work of them, from normal yard maintenance to larger projects as well. LS Tractor has the machine for you. LSTractor.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? Adam, you have a list. And before I jump in, I'll see what's on your list and see if I need to add a couple things to it or not. I'm like your safety net. You're like the Walinda family member that's up walking on the tightrope of your list, and I'm the net that they don't show you on TV that's underneath you, catching you if you fall seemingly to your death, but not really.
Catch me, I'm falling.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
The email inbox was absolutely on fire.
I'd say it was hot.
I couldn't even download the new emails because of the smoke. Want to start out with a what up? Banks Shepherd, doing some fire work on the pod graphics.
Yeah, no. Banks, a tip of the cap, sir.
That's something we've been saying we were going to do, and Banks went out and did it.
So I hope you've noticed it, that we've been trying to make sure that we get some audio teasers out there for the interviews that we've been doing here recently, both on our Twitter page and Instagram feed. And Banks is the one who's been putting those together and helping us out to help promote the pod. So thank you, sir.
100% Pod Club, Robert Hobgood. Also, my wife wanted to make sure. Didn't we mention her at the very start?
Adam, if you did, it wasn't with enough love.
The most beautiful and talented and understanding and calm of the 100% Pod Club is my wife.
Certainly. She gets to live the pod, though.
She claims she goes back and listens to some more than once.
Adam and I were talking on the phone a couple of days ago, and my wife was like, "Are y'all recording the podcast right now?" I said, "No, this is just how we talk to each other normally." Duh.
Okay, this reminds me that I don't know if you've ever told this story on the pod, but I think you should. So when we recorded the pod, I was on the phone the last time.
Yeah. Yes.
And when I finished, it was late.
Yeah.
And all the members of my family proceeded to tell me how loud I was. They're like, why were you talking so loud? Could Jones not hear you? And I said, well, we're doing a allegedly professional recording job.
Right.
And also, I'm on the phone, so you have to shout because he's farther away than he is in real life when we're in Pod World headquarters.
Sure.
But it made me happy that someone had ever told me that I was too loud because I felt like I was in your company, because that has actually happened to you during a game.
I think we have told this story, but if not, I'll tell it again. Only the 100% Pod Club members will know for sure.
They're rolling their eyes and thinking, guys, we've heard this.
So Adam and I used to do baseball, and we were doing a Carolina Duke game at Jack Coombs Field. Does Duke still play there? No, they play mostly at the Bull Stadium, right? Do they go half and half, halvesies?
I think maybe like non-conference games at the Coombs.
Has Jack Coombs Field changed at all since we used to go there?
They were going to do some renovations, remember?
Let's just say at the time, Jack Coombs Field wasn't very nice. It might be nicer now. I honestly am not trying to make any comment about its current well-being. At the time, it was not nice. Nor did it have any media capability at all. Quite
none.
Literally.
None. Zero.
So, again, at the time, we sat field level behind home plate at like a giant bench. And then the stands were right behind us. Like, the bench that we sat on was part of the stands almost. It was like the front row of the stands, essentially, with a little bit of a walkway between where we were sitting and where the actual bleachers began.
We were right behind the net that protects you from getting hit by
like
the foul
ball. If somebody, I love in baseball, Adam, when you foul it straight back, you almost got it. You almost had it.
Yep.
But if somebody has one of those where they foul straight back, if it would have done that and come at the net with some heat, we could have had our nose broken pretty easily.
Yeah.
So we were doing a Carolina Duke game, and there weren't many people there because it was at Duke. And at the time, Duke baseball wasn't very good. They've gotten better. And Duke, like, it was really bad and didn't have many fans outside of friends and family, I think. Is that fair to say, Adam?
Yes. There were probably more Tar Heel fans there than Duke fans.
And so Adam and I are doing the game. As you can imagine, we were on point and hilarious probably too.
With great insight.
Yeah. Had some great nuggets of info, some witty jokes. You know, a normal Friday afternoon at the Coombs. And so was it during the action or a commercial break?
It was during
the game. Yeah. So, I mean, it was in the middle of the game.
But you were wearing the headset, which, as we've discussed, that's a I'm doing something sign.
So this woman came up to me and asked me if I could talk a little softer because she couldn't hear the PA announcer at the baseball game. Now, keep in mind, the PA announcer may have been talking through like a boombox that had a microphone plugged into the aux jack.
Now, getting for the Tar Heels.
I'm going to tell you real talk, Adam. If you can do baseball, you can do anything. And by broadcasting-wise, and I mean the setup. I mean, there's only been one place in football and basketball that was not a million times better than a lot of baseball places that we went. Now, I don't really want to rub it in. It was Old Dominion. But they've updated their stadium.
Right.
And Old Dominion, though, Brian and I and Ben and Jody, I think we all had to, there wasn't room for us to sit. It was a concrete room smaller than Pod World headquarters significantly.
Brian was sitting on Ben's shoulders.
Yeah. And look, Brian's ripped. Like, he needs his room for his shoulders and biceps to breathe.
If you were making, if you were voting in the AP poll,
okay,
of most tenuous baseball media environments that we experienced, who would be your top three vote getters?
All this may have changed. I don't know.
Right. But we're talking about in our time, which we understand is a generation ago.
UNC Wilmington, when we had to do it outside and got rained on.
Oh, boy. I lost the laptop that day.
NC State was just one big hallway with, like, little off-ramps where you're supposed to sit. Virginia, even there, you were just in one big room with the opposing radio guy. So, credit to Carol. Even in the old Bosch, there were a lot of things not nice about old Boschmer. The radio booth was fine. And the new Bosch, we had great setup the several years that we did it in the renovated Bosch.
I just received an urgent call from both Boston College.
Oh, BC.
And Miami.
No, BC.
Who are upset they weren't mentioned.
Obviously, BC is the worst. Obviously. It's the worst.
It was a trailer.
Yeah. And we were in the, we've said it before, we were in the lap of luxury.
Yeah, we were in the nice part.
Adam and I talked to Peter Gammons in a trailer on the top of a parking deck at a BC game.
And it was about 30 degrees.
But we had heat.
Yeah, which is why Peter Gammons wanted to hang out with us. He wasn't like, guys, I feel like one day you're going to have an incredibly successful podcast. I'd like to get in on the ground floor. No, he just wanted to get warm, which is how we get a lot of our guests.
Miami even renovated their stadium, and we still sat outside.
On a concrete slab.
The first, and at the beginning, and if you've watched baseball, you've probably seen Miami's stadium on TV. They're, and it looks... You're like, whoa, are they? Do they play in paradise?
Alex Rodriguez named this? It must be unbelievably nice.
The answer is no. And we sat in the stand. We were literally in the stands. Yes. And it rains in Miami.
I think one of the last things that will ever flash before my eyes will be the image of poor Nate Striz on the mound at Miami.
They refused to call the game.
It is an absolute monsoon.
Because had they called it, Carolina would have won.
Nate Striz is out there trying to pitch a baseball. Jones and I are in the stands during this monsoon with a makeshift tarp stretched over our $31.84 worth of broadcasting equipment. And I just don't think I'll ever forget that.
These are the days. Okay, where were we? I'm off track.
Yeah.
You talk loud the other day. Thanks, Bank Shepherd, for your hard work on your...
Yeah. So we were talking about the list and how incredibly on fire the email inbox has been. Yeah. I wanted to mention Chase Rice's story in the Players Tribune. That was a great story. As you know, the whole thing with Players Tribune is it's first person. Chase Rice, of course, you've heard from him first person, former pod guest.
Y'all, I'm Chase Rice. See you later, Big Grits.
But I thought he just did a great job writing about his journey, essentially, all the way from high school to where he is today. And so if you haven't seen that story, I think it's well worth picking up.
Yeah, and go back to the fall, listen to the Chase Rice interview. I feel like Chase Rice interview, similar to the Wes Miller interview, got lost a little bit. I think it came after a tough football, right there in that stretch where football was having those amazing games but kept falling right at the end. So it was a terrific interview. We went and did on his tour bus, had a lot of fun. So if you didn't hear that one, go back and listen to it. And speaking of, I said this, but Chase Rice did a little acoustic version of Carolina Can on the virtual pancake dinner. And Adam, it was smoking.
It all comes back to the virtual pancake
dinner. As it often does. Back to the cakes.
Got a whole lot of emails that we want to address, but the only other thing on the list is a tweet from Josh Smilo, frequent pod listener, as we know. He says he just got his wife to listen to the Roadhouse Challenge, Dirty Dancing Edition.
Roadhouse.
And Josh thinks we got one new subscriber. So that's about four. She also couldn't believe Dan Cortez was a Tar Heel.
Hey, what's up? I'm Dan Cortez, and see you later, Big Grit.
So Josh says one of her favorite episodes, keep in mind she's a new subscriber, so that's episode number one. And it's her favorite. So great work on that episode.
Adam, did you happen to see the Lavelle Moten tweet?
The one with the picture of Coach Smith looking Michael Jordan in the eye.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought it was just first of all, Lavelle Moten, the head coach at North Carolina Central, just a good dude. Knows a lot of the people around Carolina basketball. Super well respected in this area. I think I mentioned before, my son was on a T-ball team with his son. Domination, no big deal. And this tweet that he sent was brought to our attention by Jared McCullen. And Lavelle Moten's tweet was as follows. Dear kids, I'm going to keep it real with you. I'm not quite as cool as Lavelle Moten in saying this.
That's how most of my tweets start, too. That's funny.
Forget about imitating MJ athletically on the court. Parentheses, you can't do that. Instead, look at my favorite pick of MJ. Look at the respect he's giving Dean Smith in this pick. No eye roll, no attitude, just respect and being coached. And it is a picture of, looks like Jordan's about to check in. He's at the scorer's table. Coach Smith is over there kind of crouched down, and they're having a conversation. And as Adam mentioned, full attention of Michael Jordan. So cool picture from a cool guy in Lavelle Moten, and a great message, of course, as well.
And Lavelle Moten's absolutely right. That is something that every kid who's playing sports can learn from. Speaking of Michael Jordan, sensational article on the early Michael Jordan from Wright Thompson on ESPN.com. It is long. You're going to have to put in the time, but you will be well rewarded. It's an incredible story. So after you finish reading Chase Rice in the Players Tribune, read Wright Thompson's story on young Michael Jordan on ESPN.
Adam is giving you some homework.
Yeah, that's right. There'll be a test.
Michelle Lawler, finishing up our conversation or our viewing of the conversation between Michelle Lawler and Dan Cortez, says that, yes, the Billy that Dan Cortez mentioned was indeed Billy Crudup. This part's unbelievable.
Yeah.
She says her character, Courtney, and Billy Crudup's character, Jason, on General College were like the Luke and Laura of the day of student TV soap operas.
That left me with only one feeling, which was we need to have Billy Crudup on the pod.
Yeah.
He also, fun fact, did all the voice work when the Carolina Basketball Museum
opened. Yes, he did. He did indeed. Adam, a couple things that we mentioned on the live pod that I want to make sure that we mention. One, Adam's already given a what up, so I'll just follow on the back of it to Aaron Mattson. Former guest, of course, here on the pod.
I'm Aaron Mattson, and see you later, Big Grits.
Aaron named the ACC Female Athlete of the Year. Second straight year that a Tar Heel field hockey player has been named the ACC Female Athlete of the Year. She joined Robbie Robinson, a men's soccer player from Clemson, who was named the male ACC Athlete of the Year. And no big deal, those are the two that I voted for, Adam, so my votes were 100% correct. Well, who'd you vote for? Oh, yeah, that's right. So Aaron Mattson led the nation in points per game, goals per game, first team All-America for the second straight year, never lost a game at the college level, been on the pod. What more is there to do, Aaron? Don't go pro field hockey. Stay here.
The voting was a beatdown. It was 42 points for Aaron Mattson, 35 of those from Jones, and then just 12 for
game,
the runner-up.
Game the system.
So 42-12, she not only won it, she clearly was the most dominant female athlete in the ACC this year.
Maybe
nationally.
And we mentioned this during the live pod, too. Dylan Sorensen, assistant coach for Carolina's track and field program, set a world record at him. 4:37, he ran a mile while dribbling a basketball. So ran a mile in 4 minutes, 37 seconds while dribbling a basketball.
I could probably do neither one of those things.
The gauntlet got laid down that I would do it in 8.5 minutes.
I think you can do it. I've been given
I know I can.
Okay. This is how people end up having to put on field hockey goalie equipment. Dylan thinks the previous record was in the 450 range, so he shattered the record. It's a fun quarantine activity.
Do you know what the fastest mile time recorded is, Adam?
Under 4 minutes, I know that.
Yeah. 3 minutes, 43 seconds.
Wow.
and then 343.13.
Who's got the record right now?
Haitham El Guerrero? I may not have said that correctly.
Coach Sorensen's coming for you is the bottom line. And he's got his basketball.
That is the men's record holder. The female record is 4:12.56. Svetlana Masterkova has that one. It's really fast.
Yes.
Both of those times, very fast.
Which just, I mean, that makes you appreciate a little more Dylan Sorensen, I think. 4:37 is not that far off 3:43.
No.
He's not that far off absolute top of the world class just running. And he was dribbling a basketball wearing his Michael Jordan jersey.
Yeah.
Wearing his shades.
Yeah, he was.
I'm going to start doing the pod wearing shades. Just like MJ and Dylan Sorensen, I'm gonna do all my interview stuff in shades.
Adam, should we get to a couple emails?
If you think your fingers can handle the scorching hot heat.
All right. I want to start with one from Bob Ward. Friend of the pod, Bob Ward, says, Jones and Adam, once again, you had me chuckling with the Dirty Dancing review. His wife, Bob Ward's wife, Anne, who was a Patrick Swayze groupie, I'm just reading it word for word, Adam, had me watch the movie, parentheses, again in all caps, just a few days before hearing your review. She at one time had a life-size poster of a shirtless, parentheses, of course, Patrick Swayze hanging in her closet. I won the poster for her by defeating a 12-year-old in a jump rope contest sponsored by WCHL at the Timberline Shopping Center many years ago. Signed, Bob Ward. Bob just, he thought that spoke for itself, Adam. No more info needed on that.
If you had asked me how would Bob Ward win a poster of a shirtless Patrick Swayze to put in Ann's closet.
Yeah.
No lie, I think one of my top three guesses would have been defeating a 12-year-old kid in a jump rope contest at Timberline Shopping Center.
It's like a Mad Libs. It's you add in 12-year-old jump rope contest, WCHL, Timberline Shopping Center.
Well, if you know Bob Ward.
Bob Ward got this poster by Feel an Activity, running a mile, dribbling a basketball.
If you know Bob Ward, you know that he's too nice to have won the poster doing something like arm wrestling someone and crushing them in defeat, unless it was like a social media representative from another ACC school.
Sure.
So it would have to be something that he didn't have to demoralize the other competitor. So jump rope, he patted that kid on the back. He's like, Tommy, you keep working at this, and one day you'll be able to win that poster of the shirtless Patrick Swayze. One day, you'll have more money than Dick's Hat Band.
Nice. Nice reference. I wonder what the assembled crowd thought when, let's assume Bob was about 45 at the time. Total guess.
So I think it was more than 5 years ago, though, Jones.
Yeah, good point. So Bob, 45-year-old man, is jump roping against probably, let's be honest, a 12-year-old girl for a shirtless poster of Patrick Swayze.
And there sat Ron Stutz in charge of it all.
Okay. Adam, what other emails do we have?
We can't do better than that.
Yeah, really.
In terms of email.
We started at the top.
I like the one from John Parker. He headlined it, Great Moment Reactions. He says he thinks we have a new segment brewing on Great Moment Reactions. He's sure, Jones, that you can come up with a better title. John's most memorable moment with a crazy reaction was the Luke May shot against Kentucky. Having lived in Kentucky a few years, John was a little extra keyed up for this game anyway. The wrong shade of blue is the wrong shade always. Period. My reaction went as follows, says John. I was sitting in my living room, engrossed in the game, as one would expect. The moment the shot fell, I shot up to run into the kids' playroom to celebrate, similar to a run-around-the-house move, yeah, which we know about. However, I misjudged the gap between the entertainment center...
Always dangerous.
Between the entertainment center and the door, and my shoulder went slam into the solid wood center full speed. The massive bruise lasted weeks, and my ability to chop wood to heat our house was significantly impaired.
Whoa.
But it was totally worth it. John Parker, 100% pod listener. That is a great, great moment reaction. I do think John's right. He's got something there. If you have a great reaction to a great Tar Heel moment, email it to us, carolinainsiderpod@gmail.com. I'll tell you one I had forgotten about until the other day. You remember when Vince Carter dunked on Tim Duncan at the Smith Center?
Yes, I do.
I ripped my pants. I was sitting in the Smith Center, and I was watching the Tar Heels and the Deeks.
Yeah, hot rivalry at the time.
And you have to remember that Tim Duncan of that time was a little, not personality-wise, but just in attention-wise, he was kind of J.J. Redick-ish. Mm. Like, he could do no wrong. Everything he did was right.
Right.
All of a sudden, here comes Vince Carter soaring up for a two-handed jam on Tim Duncan's noggin.
Jameson. Off it goes to Carter. Carter driving right down the lane. Gets the dunk, and he got fouled on the play by Goldsby. What an athletic dunk by Vince Carter.
I, similar to Vince Carter, soared out of my seat. The only problem was somehow the armrest was like hooked into my pocket.
I've had that happen. Not because of a Vince Carter dunk. I've had a pocket rip some because of the armrest.
Especially when you shoot out of your seat to celebrate this jam burger.
I would have thought the extra room from the pleats would have would have provided you some wiggle room.
I ripped my pants because of that dunk. You know, that reminds me that we also got an email about the Wall Street Journal story, is Michael Jordan the worst-dressed athlete of all time? I think the whole thing is he had his picture taken every single day. And we know from experience, somebody can take your picture on just one day. Yeah. And you got to live with those pleated khakis for forever. So I'm inclined to give Michael Jordan a little leeway, considering that out of 365 outfits every year, there's like two or three that people think are a mistake. If somebody took my picture 365 days out of, let's say, 1993.
They'd be like, how many sweatsuits does this guy own?
Do you wash that turtleneck or is that the same one? So I think people have gone overboard with that.
Whatever happened to turtlenecks?
You don't hardly ever see them anymore.
No, you don't.
What if I bring them back?
You alone. Scott Griggs sent this one in. Michael Jordan story. He says he doesn't know if it meets the criteria to be on the air. Oh, Scott. So it involves using a ski trip to Aspen as bait for my wife, which would let me go see the Bulls versus Denver Nuggets on February 2nd, 1998. Right. A sentence we've all written.
Yeah.
Joe Wolf was playing for the Nuggets. Joe Wolf is a buddy of Scott Griggs, so he had gotten Scott two tickets for the game. They were the best seats Scott's had ever had for anything ever. He said, side note, my wife did not appreciate the Nuggets' professional dance team members in front of us. Next sentence, though, it was magical. I don't know if those two things went together or not. He said, Michael was Michael. Dennis Rodman was incredible to watch because all he did was chase the ball. He said, after the game, Joe Wolf took us to meet Michael Jordan. Patiently waiting in the tunnel while he met kids from the local Boys and Girls Club and then a reporter tried to step in to interview him, only for his security to appear magically and move Mike out of the way. He said, so I nearly met him, but it turned out all right because I ended up going to a sports car or sports bar with 9 NBA players from both teams, 5 of whom were 7 feet tall, which really hit home when my wife went to the bathroom. And as she walked by Joe Wolf, I realized that he was as tall as her and he was sitting down. He said, also, Scotty Burrell showed up with 2 beautiful aerobic instructors and bought a $1,000 bottle of wine. So the scene in the documentary where Jordan makes fun of him hit extra funny to Scott.
Scott Burrell, kind of the unsung hero of The Last Dance. I feel like
he's a head coach now.
I feel like everybody likes Scott Burrell now. Joe Wolf, nearly a pod guest.
We're going to get you one day, Joe Wolf.
Another Jordan story was from Chris Furr. Chris was born and raised in Wilmington, and his dad was the principal at what had been Michael Jordan's junior high, Trask. Hmm. Nike had done an ad with a shot of the blacktop at the school with the caption, MLB Trask Middle School, site of Michael Jordan's pickup games, and they'd sent an enlarged version framed and signed by MJ to the school. Eventually, an angry parent slammed the office door and the frame fell off the wall and shattered. My dad was displeased. When I would visit my dad at work, I searched through the old yearbooks on his office shelves to find pictures of the goat from when he was about my age. My grandmother checked me out of school for a, quote, appointment when they dedicated the section of I-40 in his honor. I remember that. That was a big deal. Mm. When Chris was a student at Carolina, the Wizards were holding training camp at UNC Wilmington, and Jordan was back. I was in Wilmington, says Chris, for the weekend, and I was out at a bar/restaurant with some family, where my uncle had a gig with the band he was in.
Sweet.
R.E.M.
Hootie and the Blowfish.
We're standing there, listening to the music, when in walks MJ with an entourage of people, and they head for the back of the restaurant. My uncle's eyes got big behind the drums, and there was a buzz in the place, of course. My parents had just left, and I couldn't believe my dad had missed seeing MJ. MJ and his group, didn't stay very long, and eventually they went back past us out the door. I waited a minute, pulled out my flip phone, and headed for the door to call my dad and tell him what happened. In a hurry and looking down at my phone, I swung the door open and promptly ran smack into the goat, like burying my face in his chest. Michael Jordan had turned around and was coming back inside. I squeaked out a, sorry, I think, and he walked on, and I stood on the sidewalk outside and called my dad and all my buddies to tell them I had literally run into the goat.
You're on his list now, probably, Chris.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that guy at that bar/restaurant in Wilmington who didn't give me my space.
That one where U2 was playing.
This is my dancing space. This is your dancing space.
The one where Guns N' Roses was up on the stage. Adam, anything else?
No.
Okay. What?
Yes.
Oh! It's you're like MJ. You got to get back in that restaurant real fast. I ran into you.
We're in the 4-5. Chad Austin's email was also a good one. He's a 96 grad who spent time working under Rick Brewer and Kirsch, so you know that Chad knows what he's doing. He is not in college athletics any longer, but he would like to tell us that The Karate Kid is one of his own guilty pleasures, so he felt compelled to write and compliment us on our analysis.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Chad.
He also wants to propose an answer to a question you raised. The question you raised was about why Mr. Miyagi says,
karate here. Karate here. Karate never here.
Yeah.
While pointing to his head, heart, and waist. In all my viewings, this scene perplexed me for several years until one day it finally clicked when you consider it in context. Daniel-san had just asked Mr. Miyagi what kind of belt he had, and he jokes,
J.C. Penney, 398.
I interpret Miyagi's subsequent Karate Here dialogue that mastery of karate is found in the head and the heart, yeah, rather than the color of a belt.
Yeah.
Plus, this could explain why they didn't think about a belt color for Daniel in the tournament. So I think that probably is right. Chad goes on to relay to us an incredible fan website for the Karate Kid that has all sorts of answers to Karate Kid questions you've been wondering about. But that is a specific question.
Gotta tell you, that makes sense.
Yeah, when you put it like that, and you put yourself in Mr. Miyagi's mindset, it makes sense.
Yeah, thanks, Chad.
Yeah,
I will sleep easier this weekend.
That's right.
Okay, Adam, anything else now?
For real? No.
Okay. Adam, so what do you think about the See You Later Big Grits? Maybe we let Heather O'Reilly be in the mix too, in addition to Billy Cunningham.
I think that's fair.
We've had Anson Dorrance on the pod before, but that was pre-See You Later Big Grits days.
Wow.
So we don't have him saying See You Later Big Grits. We have not had Crystal Dunn nor Mia Hamm, on the pod. But we do have Heather O'Reilly. We had so much fun hanging out with her. It was about a year ago now, this time, maybe not quite a year ago, that we had her on. It was late summer last year. Had a bunch of fun hanging out with her. So we have one from her and, of course, Billy Cunningham. I'd say it's a dual See You Later Big Grits.
I think that's good.
All right. So we're going to let Heather O'Reilly, we're going to let Billy Cunningham, and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Heather O'Reilly. See you later, Big Grits.
I'm Bill Cunningham. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meals served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat.
See you later, Big Grits.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.